Well, as Ronj mentioned earlier, over the weekend, he started seeing texts and tweets that President Trump had died, and there was this rumor spreading, and I was getting coffee with my friends, and they started chattering about it, that what is this conspiracy that Trump isn't alive? Well, of course, that's exactly what it was, is just a rumor, a conspiracy, but why did it start, and why do these things spread like wildfire? Joining us now is Mike Rothschild. He's a conspiracy theory journalist and expert. He has written The Storm is Upon Us and Jewish Space Lasers, looking at conspiracy theories and how they spread. And he joins us now. Mike, good to talk with you.
Oh, thanks for having me back on.
You know, before we get started, the last time we spoke with you, you had recently lost your house in the Eaton Fire in California. So we wanted to ask, how are you doing? How is the recovery process going?
Well, I really appreciate you asking. We are hanging in there. I know that the rest of the world has a million other things to concentrate on, but you know, for us in Altadena and Pasadena, we're still here. We're putting our lives back together. We are making slow but steady progress, and you know, still taking care of each other and our community. We're still out here. So, thank you for sparing a thought for us.
We're glad that things are moving in the right direction for you, and we appreciate you taking time today. So, the reason we had you on is because of this death hoax that happened over the weekend. How did it first start? Because, like I said, or like Amy said, I woke up and I saw these tweets about it that had started like the night before, and everybody thought he was gone because nobody had seen him for 4 or 5 days or something like that. So how did this really get started?
Well, it was funny. It started on that Friday night, and I was at the Dodger game with my family, and I'm checking social media. I'm going, what's going on here? Is this actually happening? And then as you learn more about it, you go, no, it's not. And I think, like a lot of conspiracy theories and myths and hoaxes, it starts with a few real things that are then blown up massively out of proportion and then infused with sort of self-proclaimed expertise. I think with Trump, he hadn't spoken publicly in a few days, which is fairly unusual for Trump. His schedule for the Labor Day weekend was completely open. He had no public events. He's also been dealing with some health issues. He's been dealing with this swelling in his ankles. He's been dealing with this mysterious bruise on the back of his right hand, which he seems very intent on hiding. All of those things are happening. And then when you add all of those things together, you start to come up with a storyline that says, oh, he's secretly dead, or he's dying, or he had a stroke, or they're hiding him. And then people start looking at the traffic maps around Walter Reed Hospital, and they start spreading rumors about Trump family members touring the hospital, or all of these other things happening. And it turns into a hoax, and it catches fire on social media on a long weekend when people are looking for a distraction from all of the insanity that's going on.
Well, I want to let's dissect to exactly who was spreading that information, because Vice President J.D. Vance tweeted out, if the media you consumed told you that Donald Trump was on his deathbed because he didn't do a press conference for 3 days, imagine what else they're lying to you about. And you replied, it wasn't the media that said Trump was dying. It was certain clout chasers on social media. Can you kind of break that down a little bit?
Sure. And I think it's important to draw a line between people who are speculating, people who are just kind of having a good time, you know, sharing memes, things like that. I don't think there's any harm in that. But there were people spreading or creating these 30-tweet threads about all of their diagnosis of Trump's medical issues, and people sharing what they thought were traffic maps from around Walter Reed showing closures. Those were people who were looking for viral clout and spreading things that were not true or were just completely taken out of context. I mean, the roads around Walter Reed are closed quite often because it's a military hospital. There are reasons for why things happen. There might be reasons why Trump has a large bruise on his hand. The White House has said it's from aspirin and vigorous handshaking. I mean, I don't exactly believe that, but we also don't know that they're lying. So yeah. I think there were a lot of people spreading speculation as fact rather than just simply having a good time and realizing that this probably wasn't real.
So is it that simple? People just get a kick out of starting a rumor like this and then it taking off and they can go back and tell their friends, look what I did. Is that what this is all about?
I think for some people it is. I think it is very easy to get viral traffic on social media by just spreading something that people are going to want to believe is true. Conspiracy theory influencers have been doing it for generations. You know, long before there was social media, people were, you know, passing out pamphlets based around conspiracies that they thought were true and wanted to be true and knew would drive them some sort of clout or whatever you called it back then. So I think it's very easy to spread hoax or myth as fact and see if it catches on.
So how lucrative is this, or can it be? We know some people do make a living with the conspiracy stuff. Alex Jones is one of the most famous weirdos. So how does this happen in terms of revenue that these people generate by doing it?
Well, I think it's harder for left-leaning influencers to profit off it than the right. I mean, conspiracy theories have for a long time, maybe since after World War II, have been really the domain of the far right. And, you know, they're really the ones who've been making these books and then these films and then these sort of accounts. But I think, you know, X monetizes viral tweets. You can get podcast subscriptions. You get merchandise sales. We've seen now stories about some dark money going to leaning social media creators. It's not on the scale of what the far right does, but it's still out there. And if you create a lot of content that spreads hoaxes about, you know, Donald Trump is about to go to prison, or Donald Trump secretly, you know, had a stroke and was replaced with a body double, if you do it really well, you can make at least some amount of money off it. I think we're really seeing that right now.
You know, it was kind of interesting. Years ago, I was teaching a high school class, and one of the students had a thesis that she was going to try to argue, which I thought was really interesting, that Americans, those in the United States of America, are especially prone or primed for conspiracy theories because we're so, you know, fiercely independent, and everyone who came here was betrayed one way or another by their governments, right? If you're an immigrant and you're leaving a country. Is that something that you think does hold some water, that conspiracy theories really thrive here? Or is it like this in other countries as well?
It is definitely like this in other countries, and I've written a lot about historical examples of conspiracy theories or hoaxes or moral panics catching on. But there is something in the American character that is very prone to paranoia and feeling like they are out to get you and they are hiding something from you and only you can uncover the truth. I think there's this kind of stubborn individualism in Americans where sometimes we hitch up our wagons and go out west to start over and get away from what's going on in our old lives. I think there's this feeling that we're being lied to and exploited. And, you know, I think other people in other countries have that, but there is something very American in feeling like everyone is out to get us. We're sort of a nation built on both rebellion and, in some cases, paranoia and grievance.
This really has to... Okay. I feel like either this started with or it got much worse after the Kennedy assassination because of the conspiracies that have been prevalent for so long there. Is there something to that?
There was definitely a major industry that sprung up very quickly around the Kennedy assassination. And a lot of people who were earnestly looking for the truth and felt like the government was lying and felt like the Warren Commission was obfuscating and not telling the whole story, a lot of those people went down darker and more sordid paths with their conspiracism. But there is this feeling that the government is plotting against us and that they, you know, they had to get rid of somebody like Kennedy. And I think a lot of conspiracism stems from this idea that somebody like John F. Kennedy was this titan, he's this hero, he's untouchable. How could this loser who couldn't even defect right in Lee Harvey Oswald kill him? That's not supposed to happen. There had to be something else that happened there. And I think that feeling of that wasn't supposed to happen, therefore it didn't happen in the way we're being told about, I think that's very popular in conspiracy theorism, and it was very, very prevalent in the Kennedy assassination industry.
You know, and it's so interesting, like you bring that up on how people were dealing with the tragedy of the assassination. There has to be something behind it. Jennifer Senior, who writes for The Atlantic, wrote a piece called On Grief, and it was looking at how one family dealt with the loss of their son who died in the towers on 9/11, died in one of the towers on 9/11. Mm-hmm. And one, the mother was overcome with grief, and it kind of stopped her life. The father turned into a pretty hardcore conspiracy theorist, and she looks at how grief, like, you know, he couldn't accept that this just could happen, that a terrorist could fly a plane into a building and his son was dead. And it was a heartbreaking piece, but really interesting on how grief and loss can lead to conspiracy as well.
Oh, yeah, that's absolutely a huge part of it. We want the things that happen in our lives to have meaning. We don't want us or our loved ones to be the victims of random chance or just a bad day or being in the wrong place at the wrong time. We want there to be some sort of order and reason to what's happening. I think conspiracism really provides that to people. It provides reasons why things happen. It provides order in chaos. It provides explanation to things that defy explanation. That's why assassination attempts and mass shootings and terrorist attacks create conspiracy theories, because something happened that could happen to any of us, but it happened to these specific people. There had to be a reason why. There has to be a plot behind it. And unfortunately, the truth is that the vast majority of the time, there isn't a reason, there isn't a plot, or there is a plot in the case of 9/11, and it's just not the plot that we wanted it to be.
Yeah, so in that case, in trying to convince people that there isn't always something sinister and orderly about these major events that happen, are there actual numbers for that? Is there data to say, look, it's 99% of the time, it is actually just chaos?
You know, it's really hard to come up with hard data for all of these things, because certainly with polling about conspiracy beliefs, people will lie and they won't talk about things mm-hmm. in the way pollsters want them to. But I think when you're dealing with a conspiracy theory, and I think Kennedy is a really good example, is to boil away a lot of the ephemera around it, the extraneous stuff. You know, who did Oswald talk to in New Orleans with the CIA? That doesn't so much matter. If you look at Kennedy as Lee Harvey Oswald was a trained marksman. He had a fairly easy open shot at a slow-moving, unprotected, immobile target. And many, many people have tried to make that shot in various. So if you look at those facts, there's really no need for a conspiracy. Mm-hmm. You can want to believe things. You can want to believe that there was some higher meaning or motive behind it. But ultimately, the facts just play out what happened as how we were told it happened. So I think it's always important to just go back to the simple, basic facts about something. And I think with this Trump rumor, you can say the same thing. There wasn't any actual evidence that he had died, certainly, or that he'd had a stroke or a massive medical event. None of the things that would happen if a president did actually suffer one of those things were happening. I think people were just speculating and getting carried away with it. And that's okay, but it does reflect badly on our media, because we don't really still know how to talk about these things in a productive way.
Mike, I know we need to let you go, but I did want to ask, because this isn't a tragedy. It was the moon landing. Why are there so many conspiracies that, you know, we didn't land on the moon, especially since there were subsequent moon landings? Why did that become so popular?
You know, I think it's another one of those things where, you know, with a lot of these things, it's a tragedy that wasn't supposed to happen. I think with the moon landing, it was something extraordinary. And I think there is a sort of need in people to find a real explanation for something very outsized or unexpected that they don't quite understand. So you have all of these people who've dedicated all of this wasted time to disproving the moon landing, when it's actually quite easy to prove that we went to the moon. There's certain things that happened to those spacecrafts that only could have happened if they were in space, and only could have happened if they were on the moon. The moon landing was a wonderful thing. I wish we'd been landing on the moon for the last 50 years. I don't know why there's a need to take something great and turn it into something terrible, but some people are just like that.
Oh, it's fun stuff, man. I feel like that moon landing conspiracy that we did it in a soundstage, that's just really funny to me. That's one of those conspiracies I find to be very funny.
I have a friend whose dad was, he's like, I can prove it's North Dakota.
Oh, can you?
I was like, really?
Oh, sure, take me there, you dork. Also, Buzz Aldrin can punch all the people in the face, and I will I'll have a great time with it. Hey, Mike, we're glad things are going better after the fire for you, and thank you for talking with us about this stuff. It's super interesting, and we'll do it again.
Oh, thanks a lot.
Mike Rothschild, conspiracy theory journalist, expert, author of a couple of great books, The Storm Is Upon Us and Jewish Space Lasers. It's just
fun.
I think it's fun to take the air out of conspiracies.
Yeah.
I used to really love them, but I grew up. I used to really believe in the Kennedy one.
Really?
Yes.
I do know this. You told me that.
Yeah.
I think it's cute.
It is. That I did that?
Yeah.
Yeah. But I grew out of it. It's Chris and Amy on KMOX. Don't forget the Gas House Gang at 12 o'clock.
So, earlier this week, we determined that Chris Ranji is a psychopath and possibly a serial killer. This is because this man drove to Chicago over halfway.
I was coming back.
Coming back from Chicago.
I needed to be alone with my thoughts.
From Chicago to St. Louis, more than half of the trip in silence.
Okay.
Picture Chris Ranji. He's got his hands on the steering wheel. 10 and 2.
Actually, I go 12 and 12. I'm like 11:55. I go 11:55 and 12:05. Like I'm 81 years old.
Okay, so 11:55 and 12:05. His hands on the steering wheel. It's just dead silent for 3 hours. You know this man is driving to kill someone or he's driving away from a murder scene.
So I don't think so, because you can vote on our Twitter poll at Chris Amy KMOX. It's pinned right at the top. So follow us there. And so far, no. The question is this. Is it insane to drive in silence?
Mm-hmm.
And so far, no is winning by a lot.
Yeah. Well, we
also almost 73% of the vote. And we have a few comments from listeners. Harambe actually tweeted in.
He did.
And he said, how is yes not 90% plus?
You know why? This is what scares me. I think that if we could break down the demographics of our audience, 70% of them are serial killers. I think we have
70.
I think we have.
We don't have that many serial killers operating at once.
Well, no, it's a percentage. 70%. So if there's only 10, that's 7.
Well, but we have a lot of listeners, so we don't know that 70% of them. That's a lot of people.
I know. I just think we've really cornered the killer market.
John wrote on the Twitter page, he says, I can't do that. If I am, something really wrong has happened.
Yeah, like
and
a
you know
murder.
What? It is a great time to think. So we are so bombarded with stimulus all day, every day, eye stimulus, ear stimulus. Sometimes I get in a car and I just want to mellow out.
So you're not totally wrong. That's the thing, is I am agreeing with you and disagreeing with you at the same time. I agree with you that we are overstimulated. I agree with you that we need silence. My goodness, I'm a distance runner. Ran this morning, however long I ran, no music, you know, no radio. It's just silent because I need the quiet. But for some reason, I have no problem saying that you are absolutely right, that it's good to drive in silence sometime, and that only psychopaths do that.
Okay. I think you think there are a greater percentage of psychopaths in the world than there actually are.
What if everyone's a psychopath? I mean...
That doesn't make any sense, because there's got to be a baseline.
I think there are a lot of psychopaths. I think they listen to our show.
Maybe.
Because think of this, they're not working.
I'll tell you what. Follow us on Twitter at Chris Amy KMOX. Maybe they're out and about, they're outside sales and they're driving around to place from place to place.
What time of day was OJ and his Bronco?
Like 4 o'clock in the afternoon.
Okay. I was wondering if he would have been listening to us.
No, because he was on the phone.
That's right.
No, AC was on the phone. You know who I am, damn it. That's
but
he was
no
on the
radio.
Phone with Bob Costas.
He was on the phone with Bob Costas.
Right? Or was OJ on the phone with Bob Costas? Who was on the phone with Bob Costas when that was
That's
going on?
That's insane.
Isn't
That's
it?
Insane that those words just came out of your mouth.
Right? Whatever.
Those were the days.
Oh, my gosh. That's when things were not... That was the craziest time. And then you think at the time, like, nothing will ever be crazier than this. Nothing is ever going to be crazier than OJ.
So true. On the phone with Bob Costas, driving his white Bronco. Wasn't it a super
after double
slow
murder.
Chase, too?
Yes.
It was a very slow chase.
Just nuts, and it somehow got crazier many years later.
Al Cowling,
AC. You know who I am, damn it. That's what he said. All right. So, so follow us on Twitter and let us know if you're a psychopath. If you listen to the show, at Chris Amy KMOX, let us know if you're a psychopath, and we love you, you crazies. It is time for the midweek, midday, midlife.
Yeah. Oh, and we need to hear from you. 314-436-7900. Call or text. What have you sacrificed for your kids? It could be booze. It could be your motorcycle you used to ride. Could be something totally different. 314-436-7900.
Fun in general? Let us know.
Your happiness?
Yeah, your happiness. What have you sacrificed for your kids? Tell us all about it. You can also leave us a voice message on the Odyssey app. It's Chris and Amy on KMOX. Gas House Gang coming up at 12 o'clock. Amy Marks Kors, don't forget. A conversation with Ozzie Smith.
Whoa.
Talk to Tom Ackerman. Chase Briscoe, NASCAR driver on the Enjoy Illinois 300, which is this weekend right across the river in Madison, very close to Granite City.
Are you going?
Maybe.
You could go one of my friends, visit Pam.
She's not going to be there. One of my friends wants to go. I don't know. Maybe we'll see.
Wow, what a great commercial you just did.
Well, I'm not.
You should go. It's fun.
I'm not doing a commercial for them.
No, you are not.
No.
Hey, guess what?
If they want to pay me, I will.
No, they don't want to pay you.
Damn.
It is our midweek, midday, midlife. And today we are crowdsourcing. We want to hear from you. So this actually, it came up because I've been talking about motorcycles recently. I unfortunately saw a bad motorcycle crash a few days ago on Manchester Road, which was really sad. I was trying to look on the news or look in reports from the police department to see if the victim was okay. And I think that he is, because I think if something serious had happened, that would have been reported. So I think he's okay. But my dad used to have a motorcycle, and he had four little kids. I was the second oldest, and he would ride his motorcycle, and then sometimes I'd get to sit in the back, on the back, and we would drive, you know, the country roads out to Herman, Missouri, or whatever it is, down to Washington, Missouri. And it was so much fun, a little scary. I made the mistake that I think all kids do, which is when he turns, you know, you lean into the turn. So yeah. I would try to counter. Uh-huh. I'd lean the other way, because it's just such a natural habit to try to counter the turn by leaning the other way. And it was a ton of fun, but eventually he sold the motorcycle and he said, I have a wife and four kids. It is super easy to crash on a motorcycle. And if you get hit while you're on a motorcycle, you're probably going to lose, because a car is going to do a lot more damage to your body than you will to the car. And so he gave up the motorcycle, and he's fine with it. It was a choice that he made. But it did get me wondering, what have you given up? What have people given up because they have a family now? They have kids and they're like, okay, I'm not going to do this anymore. It doesn't necessarily have to be because of danger. It can be for any reason.
Yeah, maybe you had a dream of being in a band, right?
That's what you went to.
Think about that. Maybe you had a dream of being in a band and you're like, you know what? I got kids now. I'm not doing this anymore.
But I mean, like you're 30 and you're still dreaming of being in a band?
That's possible.
Yeah.
Well, some people have kids at like 25, 26.
That's true.
You know,
maybe you gave up your dream of being in a band. That's fair.
Well,
I think that's so funny.
Well, you said it didn't have to be dangerous. And, no. You know, like, hey, maybe you liked the idea of going from venue to venue every weekend and maybe being on the road, packing up your gear.
Matt,
but then you start to have kids.
Matt is a young gun over here.
Yes.
He is a musician. How many kids would you have before you gave up your dream of being in a band?
One. Not even once, maybe. Yeah. If there's an idea that there may be a child in the near future, I'm getting a 9-to-5.
But you already gave up.
Not even one. I don't even need one kid.
Just a shame of my peers if I'm 35. And
what would force you to give up on your dream of being in a band? You telling me I'm not any good?
I've seen this thing online where it's like, when you're 16, you tell a girl you're in a band. Oh my gosh, you're in a band. When you're 20 and you tell a girl you're in a band. it's okay when you're 35 and you tell a girl you're in a band, oh my God, you're still in a band. Get a job.
Get a life, yeah. buddy.
Unless you're actually making a living.
Yeah, yeah.
I'll tell you what, though. I don't think that's a bad living at all. Even if you're not in a big rock band,
yeah.
you know, even if you're not making millions, if you make enough to live and all you do is play Friday nights at local pubs or whatever, that's not a bad living.
My cousin had a friend who, I guess we were in our early 20s at this time, and my dad was introducing himself,
mm-hmm.
and my dad's like, so what do you do? And the guy's like, I'm a goalie. He's like, oh, you're a goalie. Like, for what team? He's like, well, I don't have a team right now. And my dad said, you're an out-of-work goalie? That's a tough position to be in.
Let me tell you, I do think some of our listeners aren't quite getting it. This texter to 314-436-7900. It says, I sacrificed my kids. Best thing I've ever done for myself. I have so much more money now.
Oh my God.
No, you can't do that. Another one says, for my three kids, I gave up my money, my freedom, yeah. ever being able to go out with friends, but I most certainly did not give up beer.
Yeah.
You give up
fair.
The wrong things.
Yeah.
Isn't it that like each kid will cost you $1 million in their lifetime? Yeah.
It can't be a million.
No, I think it is.
A million?
Yeah.
Like, I guess when you include college or something?
Maybe, but I do know a friend of mine had three little kids, and for a while, she was paying for daycare for all three of them. And from the time they were little until the time COVID hit, which, you know, they were home, she said they spent like $220,000 on daycare. That's so much money in just a handful of years.
Well, daycare is outrageous.
Yeah.
That's why any, you know, all these... people have ideas, politicians have ideas for taking care of daycare mm-hmm. or making sure the daycare is included. Because, I mean, if you have a career, it's almost impossible.
Well, unless you have
a lot of means.
The culture has changed a lot. I mean, in the 60s and 70s.
Mom stayed at home.
Yeah, and my goodness, in the 80s, mom stayed at home, and now it's, you know, dual income households
yeah.
are definitely the way I feel, like at least half, if not the majority.
A listener here says, I was listening to your show and I had to give up alcohol for my daughter. I was either going to be a drunk dad that wasn't emotionally around, or I was going to get sober for her. And today I am currently 4 months sober and my daughter just started first grade. It's the best decision ever.
Congratulations. That is really
keep
moving.
It up.
You made the right decision. I mean, you're going to change the trajectory of your daughter's life by being a father who is present and emotionally available. That will absolutely change your kid's life. A friend of mine gave up. She drank a lot and also like smoked pot a lot and had to give it up because she's like, I'm either going to lose my addictions or I'm going to lose my family. I mean, it was an ultimatum.
William is in the Central West End and joins us on KMOX. Hello, William.
Yeah, hello, guys. I love your show.
Aww.
And your board operator is really nice. So I just want to thank him for getting me on. And I do have a crush on Amy. And I've had it ever since she was doing hockey talk years ago on either, what was it, on AM 55 somewhere.
It was here. When the Blues were here.
Yeah.
Back when they won the Stanley Cup, only Stanley Cup with KMOX.
Yep. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I've had a crush on you since then. So if I beg you to marry me, please forgive me.
Oh,
you're awesome.
God, William.
I'm sorry.
Yuck.
I know. I look, at least nobody is hearing this.
Okay.
So you know what I
Ouch.
Okay.
At least your show sucks.
Here's a compliment and one that's not. All right, go ahead.
All right. I had a super bike. A super bike. Okay, Amy, I had a super bike. My third motorcycle.
Amy, you interested? Super bike.
No, she knows what I'm talking about. So I had an FZ750. Okay, I spent $5,000 on it back in 87. Bought it as a freshman. And I had it from age 18 to 25. And I'm not going to be talking to you guys today if I don't do what Amy's father did. I gave it away. I gave it back. I sold it. Never went back.
Yeah.
I wrote, and so one of my buddies, and I know you, Amy, if you know motorcycles, he wanted me to deliver a 900 Ninja about a couple years later, and I was like, okay. And so that was my last ride. Okay,
oh, man.
I took a 900 Ninja from Manchester all the way to downtown. I did enjoy myself, that bike killed everybody. That's all I can tell you.
Oh, my gosh. Did it? Whoa.
Yeah. The 900 Ninja was notorious for everybody thinking they knew how to ride, and then they were dead.
Well, that's So that's a good thing to sacrifice and for your children. William, thank you.
Thank you, William. I'm glad you are still alive.
I am too.
Thank you very much.
And actually, I kind of wish William would take you off my hands.
I don't lose my job.
Hey, William, you know what? Take Amy out. For good.
Well, actually, it would take you off your hands if it was on the 900 Ninja, because it sounds like nobody is surviving that.
Big Blonde Dan writes in, says, played rugby for years, loved it, but was beating myself up, broken collarbone, nose, fingers, knees, etc. But I wanted to be able to play in the yard with my three kids as they got older. I had to stop.
That's smart. That's tough. I mean, I will say, it's funny. I was listening to an interview. TJ Oshie, former Blue, was on the Spit and Chicklets podcast, and he talked about that. He goes, he was in such bad shape that at one point his daughters had to like hold his hand, help him get out of the car, and help him walk to the chiropractor because he was in such bad back pain. And a lot of times these athletes, like Alex Petrangelo, who is pretty much calling it quits, they have to decide, am I going to be available at all for my kids to throw football around or to sit on the floor and play a game with them?
I thought, I'm telling you, when these texts came in, I thought they were from the same person. These are three different people.
Okay.
In succession say, I gave up sex, not my choice. I gave up on being a paid sperm donor. I gave up cocaine. Those are three separate people. I swear.
Who is our listening base? These are the psychopaths.
That you're talking about.
That I'm talking about.
That's true. They are. Another person gave up smoking cigarettes and haven't missed them. Back in 1989, they gave up smoking cigarettes.
Wow. So, for a millennial. A millennial child.
Right?
If that's for their kid in 89.
You know, a message came in a bit ago that says, hey, Chris, I popped into Chicago over the weekend, met a very nice woman with two kids who asked me to reach out and say they miss you. Come home.
Oh, that's so sad.
You know what I did for
that's
my children?
So sad, Ron.
What I did for my children?
What?
I sacrificed
you gave up
living
Chicago.
With them.
Yeah.
I gave up Chicago.
You gave up Chicago.
And I came to St. Louis.
You're like, these kids, are they... So like they're all the time. Yeah, they're all the time.
Wait.
They're your kids.
They're here from now on.
They're like forever. Like because we had them. Yeah. Okay. I gotta move in with my mom in St. Louis.
Let us know.
What a terrible! You're a terrible father.
I am not.
You are.
I am. I know their names. 314-436-7900. Tell us what you gave up for your children. Part of our midweek, midday, midlife. And everybody has something different they've given up. You can also leave a voice message on the Odyssey app where you can listen to the show live. And you should have that app on your phone so you could take it wherever you go. Let us know. It's Chris and Amy on 104.1 FM KMOX. The midday, midlife. Let us know what you have given up for your kids.
We've had some really moving and serious sacrifices that parents have made for their own betterment and for the well-being of their child. And we've also had some that were not so much that.
Well, of course, some people haven't given up anything. Screw
cocaine.
These kids.
Maybe cocaine's real.
Well, if you were using any sort of drug.
Ask the cocaine texter if he was making a joke or if he really did give up cocaine for his kids.
I'll do it right now. Okay. Is this a joke or is this real? Let us know. And this person says that they gave up horseback riding. Had to sell my horse. Too expensive and dangerous. 100% worth it.
Interesting. And I will say, horses are very expensive.
They are extremely expensive.
It's like throwing
expensive.
Money into a field.
Yep.
They are so expensive. And I think if you are any type of experienced equestrian in any way, you've been thrown from a horse at some point. I mean, I used to ride horses, and I did a horse one time. I was riding a hunter jumper, and the horse didn't want to go over the jump and just like locked all four of his legs
no.
right before the jump. And so I went over the jump. The horse
isn't
didn't,
that,
though.
I think that's what happened to Christopher Reeve. I think his horse got spooked. And
yeah. But then also, you know, out, you know, family members who have, who live in like, you know, more rural Missouri, maybe like Cuba or Rolla, Missouri, go horseback riding in the woods and they can get spooked and you get thrown into a fence or whatever it may be. Yeah, pretty dangerous.
This message here says, dude, I have given up the TV in our main room, so I have to go upstairs to our second TV while he watches Mr. Beast.
That's a real,
Mr. Beast. Come on, man. Like, okay.
I don't like him.
Yeah,
we've had this discussion, but I don't like him.
Yes, the person with the horseback, with the horse who had to give that up, says that they were thrown several times once they got pregnant, let it go. I mean, yeah, obviously.
Once
she got pregnant.
Yes.
So
it sounded like she got thrown, and then once she got pregnant, not being thrown, though. That it sounded like they were related. She was just saying she stopped writing. Yeah.
here's a message. Yeah. It says, you know what else we did? My daughter went to prison. My wife and I got legal custody of our two grandkids. We had them about 8 years, gave up a lot of our time.
Yeah.
They were like 6 and 4. It was crazy, but we made it through.
Wow.
So, okay.
Yeah. No, I do know stories like that. If the parents get in trouble, if a parent passes away, whatever it may be. And think of that, the grandparents taking over, they're older, in life. And now you say you're 70 and you're chasing around an 8-year-old or an 11-year-old. Those are the years where you think, okay, now it's finally about me. We're going to go travel. We're going to play pickleball. We're going to do what we want. And they made a huge sacrifice to take care of their grandkids.
Well, it's true that some people just never are able to fully take care of their own children. That happens. It's really sad, but it does happen. And in a case like that, you're right. If you're the grandparent and now it's your responsibility, I mean, what are you going to do? You kind of have to, right? You can't just let the kids go somewhere else. There's nowhere for them to go.
Yeah.
It's really sad.
No. And it does happen so frequently. But I mean, and it's one of those where life is full of trade-offs. So, yeah, you're making a sacrifice. But as we mentioned, you know, it's worth it in so many cases. And so, yeah, when you have kids, your life isn't just about you. You can't just, you are taking care of someone else and the responsibility of that and the love that comes with it.
Sure.
And it can be really, really, really difficult, but also very rewarding.
I mean, Amy, we talked about this a lot, and it's probably easier for us to say, because neither of us have kids that we know about, or that I know about.
Yeah, I think I would know. I feel like I would know.
You would absolutely know. But it can't only be about your kids.
No,
Your life cannot only be about your children once you have them. Of course, they're your number one priority, but you still have to have a little you.
Oh my gosh, you do.
It's got to be a little bit about you, too.
It does. Well, and especially, like, let's say, like, in my family, mom and dad came first. And they loved us, and my goodness, my mom homeschooled us. She was home with us. It wasn't like they devoted time to us, but mom and dad came first. They were the foundation of the family unit and date nights for them. Their lives didn't revolve around us. We were in their lives. And then also individually as a couple, you still have your interests and personality. You need to take care of yourself. Go do things that you like, because I think it's important for kids to see that your individual life doesn't end once you have kids.
So the person who texted in that they gave up cocaine was serious. 25 years ago when they found out they were pregnant, they gave up coke.
Wow.
Yeah. So
kudos to all these people. That's really impressive. That is not easy to do.
Oh, Amy, Gene is watching on YouTube, says they also have a crush on you.
Oh, wow.
Gene has a crush on you, Amy.
Oh, thank you to everyone for listening.
All right. Now who's got a crush on me? Leave us a voice message on the Odyssey app. We'll be back with you tomorrow at 9 o'clock. Hope you come back for that, 9 to 12 o'clock every weekday. But we're going to be at Whitmore Country Club for the Ted Savage Golf Classic. will be out there live. We hope to have a good guest list for you, because a lot of Cardinals dignitaries will be there and will be present. So we'll be there tomorrow starting at 9 o'clock. Have a great day. Talk to you tomorrow. Gas House Gang, Tom Ackerman and me, Chris Ranji, next on KMOX.